we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
In my professional career, I have gone to hundreds of meetings and conferences, and I've never gone to a more important one than we were able to enjoy this past weekend in Orlando. The FLCCC's inaugural science conference, the spike protein injury and the manifestations of it and the treatments for it. Jordan, what did you think? And by the way, Jordan, you did an outstanding job yesterday in your presentation before the group.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, usually, probably most people listening, maybe they go to medical conferences, but usually they're drum, they're for the most part, kind of forced to be there for your CME hours. this was exciting. Everyone that was there, which it was sold out, was there to learn, and excited to learn, because the thing that we were learning were going to help us take care of patients and get rid of the current environment of really lying to our population about the safety of not only the vaccines, but the safety of the spike protein, which itself is causing unknown, undue, really unmitigated, and really debilitating harm. So how can all those things be true? Unknown because no one talks about it, but debilitating because people are suffering and need help.
No question. Yeah, I thought that from the first to the last speaker, every one of them was intriguing in a lot of respects. And a good sign, I would say, you kind of touched on it, was it was an overflow capacity. And that is great news, because this, I bet, is the first scientific discussion conference that has been on the true nature of this disease that's paralyzed us for almost going on 3 years now.
And I will tell you, even after talking to up here, after the meeting, all the speakers came and we kind of got together and did kind of a debriefing, I guess like a military debriefing. And first of all, most everybody wanted to get back together in 3 months. I think that was I have a 4 and 6 year old kid as well, as I've got to make sure my wife's happy. So traveling every to do that is probably not as easy, but at least in 6 months. I mean, that's how rapid the knowledge base of this is. And from everyone's different disciplines, that's the other nice thing about this conference. This wasn't a siloed conference. This was a conference that included multiple disciplines, from people like me that are taking care of people that are sick every day, all the way to the pathologist right there who's looking at the dead people's tissues.
Yeah. Yeah, every speaker brought a different perspective and great knowledge.
Words I'm actually get excited.
Out. We better start a big gym like a Rupp Arena or something, because the more doctors that hear about the science, the more they're going to have to start coming to these things and learning about what's going on.
Yeah, I was excited, to really see that all those different disciplines, from, I guess we have pulmonology, me as, general medicine, we had lots of kind of infectious or complex disease specialists. We had pathologists. We had Dr. Merrick and Dr. Corey, obviously, who are two of the best critical care physicians in history. And then we had Steve Kirsch. So Steve Kirsch is a data guy that, is really, I think politically, if we were to sit down and talk politics, I think we would have very different opinions, Stuart. Yeah. I think he's a liberal, but he's what we call a classic liberal, a classical liberal who believes in free speech. And, he disagrees on maybe where we're going on certain, functions, whether it's how healthcare is delivered specifically, but the censorship is what is so troubling to him. And I think it's amazing what he's doing, even helping doctors pay for defenses in California, because that's where he's from. And he's trying to save his state from the mess they're really getting themselves into. Of course, they get themselves into messes all the time, I think. But it's
right.
The other thing is, I think hopefully that this will be a video. They videoed this, professionally videoed it. So it will be available. I thought kind of backdoor discussions was interesting that Steve Kirsch was like, well, we need to get this to everybody. How much does it cost to just get this paid for? And I don't have the kind of money he does, but the money that he was discussing, just kind of donating and get it out to everyone, I was pretty impressed with. So,
yeah, that's great to hear him say that. And I mean, they had three or four of those camera guys. Of course, a couple were set up in the back, but just roaming around. I'm looking forward to the production because it's going to be a very first-rate deal. Every physician needs to watch these lectures. Dr. Bean, Cool Beans himself was there, gave a wonderful speech. He was really funny at the end when he was running away from the moderator. Because he was so excited and sharing the information.
I think the other debriefing thing we talked about was that 30 minutes to give a speech on this is a lecture is too short. Merrick agreed. He said we at least need 45. I was talking to Ryan Cole, and Ryan was like, "Yeah, I actually had to do an hour speech in 30 minutes, and that's why I was speaking so fast." So
yeah. He started it out, and that put a, he was the first lecture, and he put us on the road to success. He lit it up. He teed it up for the rest of you guys to stroke it out there, because, boy, howdy, there is no denying with the evidence from the slides that he showed and the different studies he was able to demonstrate, this vaccine, as they call it, what a deplorable example. This vaccine is killing and hurting millions. And to not have the people that have done this to us in prison already is a travesty. And there's no denying the evidence. People have got to wait.
Interestingly enough, I'll give you a little, behind the scenes action here. I won't tell you who, but it was funny. Dr. Nass kind of asked everybody who in the room, and this is all the speakers. And there are 12 speakers, 13 speakers. Anyway, just interesting to hear everyone. Yeah. Who is vaccinated, which is kind of a funny question over lunch. I wouldn't recommend that anyway, but about half of even the speakers were vaccinated, but it was interesting to hear how many had been injured or had a family member injured. And those had that. And I hate it for the medical profession that to discover the deceit requires you to have somebody harmed, somebody you loved harmed, is a terrible way to discover you've been deceived. It's a lot easier to discover you've been deceived by reading about it and doing your own research.
Yeah, I thought that was when Steve Kirsch spoke, he asked the audience to raise their hands if they have a family member who has been injured or killed by the vaccine. And a large majority of people raised their hands. It was amazing.
Which is interesting. I mean, you'd think among our group of physicians that were there, that most of them wouldn't have that. But again, a lot of us, I mean, how long has the vaccine been available? I didn't take it. Stuart, I'm assuming you didn't take it. But
no way.
I never asked you on a personal level. But, a lot of them come to the realization that there's corruption here because of the harm that it caused to either them or a family member. And that's what we got to avoid. I mean, as a physician, you shouldn't find out that what you're telling people to do hurt people by first of all, imagine the guilt you feel when it finally hits you or hits your own loved one. And you realize how many other loved ones did this hit that aren't my loved one.
Right. You know, I was on the vaccine working group, as they called it, for the state. And it was appalling to me from the very first meeting how none of it made sense. And I tried to get the word out. But in our state, the medical association, the board, here who runs everything. They are a voice of the hospital association in large measure. They refused to hear it. They rejected it. I begged them to listen to the science. And to even early on, the first time the doctors in our state heard anything about the vaccine, other than the PR push that the media did, was a 30-minute infomercial that Pfizer put on a week before the vaccine came out in December of 20. And
they really co-opted the word vaccine.
Yeah. You're right. It's such a lie. It's no vaccine. And it's just amazing that that our profession has allowed the destruction of the system on our backs, and we won't wake up and hear the truth. But unfortunately for them, well, fortunately for the world, the world is not accepting it anymore. The less than 4% of people have received this new bivalent vaccine, miracle vaccine that they came out with 6 weeks ago. Less than 4% of Americans have accepted it. The public is way ahead of our profession in seeing the lies and deceptions. And I hope and pray that our profession repents and starts waking up to the evidence.
That lunch show is that these guys that were there, that they're willing. I mean, that's the other thing I loved about every physician there. I can tell you, just like Joe probably won't even care that I'd say this, but Dr. Shepherd is a good example of a guy that when he came to us after his group had kind of decided to vote him off the island because of his views on masks, the vaccine, and ivermectin. I mean, I really didn't even have to interview him, because the fact that you would get voted off the island by standing up for that stuff for your patient is, to me, that tells me everything about you. Okay. Same kind of thing here. I mean, I think every person at this meeting, as well as every doctor that was willing to stand up and give a speech about their discipline, that I love being around them, because they're like me. They went into medicine for the correct reasons. They love people and they love science and they're curious. And we've got a lot of doctors that don't have any of those traits.
Yeah, it's apparent they don't. Medicine. And what is the underlying problem they're having? It clearly has to be pride and fear. Pride and or fear is what is driving them to reject the abundant evidence that is hurting and killing millions. And I hate it for them. I really do feel sorry. They're not my enemy. They're not your enemy. But they're their own enemy, like we all can be. It is tragic. It is tragic. Once again, the clearest example in the federal hearing data that the DOD, Department of Defense, gave in the hearing that I was part of in March, of the 2.4 million service members in almost 2 years, in 23 months of data, 83 died from the COVID. 127 died from the vaccine within 48 hours. It was exponentially higher than that if you go long term. But this is their data. People wake up.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, even the books like Turtles All the Way Down, which Steve Kirsch recommended, but is written by an anonymous author, even though it's edited by Mary Holland of the Children's Health Defense Network, who's a big lawyer. All they do in that book is use the government's own data and just ask questions. And God forbid they do that. It'll make you feel and like you've been duped. And you probably feel that way because you probably have been.
Yeah. Have you read the book?
I have not. I mean, I just started it on the way home on the plane.
And okay.
It's pretty compelling. And interestingly enough, the author of it is still unknown, even though there is two authors and they're Israelis, but they would not put their name on it because it's, you know, dangerous for them to suggest different, which is crazy in this world.
Here is the word that the Israeli doctors who gave her the data, here's a word that they would have to adhere to in order to maintain a livelihood. It is verboten. The German word for forbidden. Isn't that just so descriptive of the tragic, horrible catastrophe we're in? Yep. I can't wait to read that book.
A couple of other things that I think were interesting, you know, things that I think America Out Loud, Peter McCullough, and Malcolm Out Loud have always been, you know, talking of probably oral and nasal health in terms of nasal washes, how important this is. Again, I'm kind of coming around to the actual science behind it. And that kind of, I guess, Peter McCullough is always ahead of us, so not surprising. But in terms of his understanding of things, takes us a little while to catch up. We don't have the brain that he has. But, you know, he's been advocating for these nasal sprays, nasal washes, oral rinses, things like COVID, Fix RX, those kind of things. And I kind of understood it, but the more even now after that conference, looking at the, you know, the amount of inoculum required, and then even, you know, looking at some of the stuff Ryan had in terms of tissues there, it's pretty consistent that that's something we ignore, dental health, as well as nasal, you know, really what's the junk in our nasal passages and in our mouth. Talking about gum chewing. I know I saw you chewing gum the whole time at the thing, but gum chewing, not sugary gum, but actually gum that's, you know, just increases oral production of enzymes, keeps a lot of things away from getting to where they shouldn't. And I think that's an interesting thing that I've, you know, dentistry, and this radiologist recently said dentistry to medicine is one of the biggest gaps there is. I mean, they really are siloed.
Yes, too much, way too much. I'm not tooting my horn here because, Doctor, the science behind the povidone iodine is strong, and the products that they are selling on America Out Loud are important for preventing it. But the very first person I remember calling in February of 20, after I got put on that working group, was an infectious disease expert. It was a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of the week, an infectious disease expert at UAB. And one of the first questions, because we've known for decades, that, I mean, our grandparents knew that rinsing out your sinuses was good for a head cold. And one of the very first questions I asked him, and this kind of, looking back on it, is the story of the last 3 years. One of the first questions I asked him was, why are we not preaching from the rooftops for everybody to start using saline nasal rinse? And his immediate brief response was, nobody makes money on salt water.
Well, we will be back for our second segment. This again is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
All right. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead. With Dr. Jordan Vaughn, I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and we are on cloud nine after the, what I believe to be the most important medical conference I've been to in my life. And it was the FLCCC's Dr. Paul Merrick and Pierre Corey and Keith Berkovich, who I got to meet and speak with for an extended period of time. And he was kind of the impetus behind it. Dr. Berkovich is a guy out of, New York City.
Manhattan,
yeah. And he is a brilliant guy. He's an integrated physician. He does what some would call functional medicine, but he is an MD that is over the decades co-opted or incorporated the functional medicine and integrative medicine into his practice and has a very successful practice. And he had the knowledge, he had the foresight and understanding that somebody had to jump on this catastrophe from the science perspective that wasn't adulterated, wasn't sold out, wasn't fearful. And so he called a patient of his, Betsy, who was the moderator, and she's
evidently
the moderator.
She used to be big in CBS News back in the day, by the way.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How she sounds. She was like a, I was talking to somebody about her. I guess I'm too young to remember, but she was like kind of Diane Sawyer-ish. And you can tell by the way she presents herself.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the lady, if you've ever been on there, and they, I forget how many thousands of people watch that live every Wednesday evening. They've been doing this for over a year that I've been on it on Wednesday nights. And then you can go back and watch any of theirs like you can do with our podcast. You can go back and listen to any of our podcasts. She is the moderator and she is very sharp, but she, in her ability to organize and bring people together, Dr. Berkowitz called her and said, "We got to do something." And she was and he knew Dr. Merrick. He reached out to Dr. Merrick, and then Dr. Merrick reached out to Pierre Corey, and the rest is history, as they say. But it is a phenomenal organization. If you know of a physician that has not heard of FLCCC.net, right? Yeah. And Frontline Critical Care Consortium, I believe is what it stands for. But they put on a science expose this weekend, and I think that's the perfect word for it because so much of it. This is a new threat, a new infection. Relatively speaking, even though it seems like it's been with us all our lives in the last 3 years. But it was a first-rate, high-class, scientific presentation, one presenter after another. And I just can't encourage those who are physicians to watch it enough or the patients to go to their physicians and almost demand that they watch, they go on to their website. And if it costs $125 or whatever to watch these presentations, they owe it to their patients because this was raw data. This was real science, unadulterated by the, I was joking with Betsy. I said, I didn't see the Gilead poster out front paying for this because a lot of medical conferences, when you have a lot of them are defrayed, the costs are defrayed because there are exhibits put on by the the pharmaceutical companies and the medical supply companies that defray the cost to the to those attending. That clearly was not the case with this one. It was a relatively expensive conference.
Yeah, I think to Pierre and Paul's credit, they wouldn't even allow any advertisements.
None. And there are very good nutraceuticals that are helpful, as a few of the presenters discussed. But they would not allow it because there was going to be zero appearance of conflict of interest. And that one of the presenters, I forgot who it was, talked about how, I think it was Dr. Jim Thorpe, talked about how offensive that phrase is, because it should be offensive to the real scientist, the real physician. We ought to be aware of what the potential conflicts are when we are dispensing a drug or using a certain device. But people that have been, he's almost 70 years of age, he has seen this, his profession, the high risk pregnancies. He sees 8,500 a year. It's an amazing man, and with tons of experience. But he made a great point. And for our profession to have subtly or outright been sold our soul, like we've done over the last one or two generations, we've got to have a reckoning with that. We've got to come to an understanding that we have an obligation, a moral, most importantly, ethical, moral, spiritual obligation to presenting the evidence for the benefit of our patients, and not to allow ourselves to be hoodwinked, to be blinded by the greed that is within all of our hearts. And it was a beautiful presentation you gave in that respect. It was tragic, the numbers that he gave us regarding the vaccine injuries to pregnant women and breastfeeding women, but then also to women at large of menstrual age, and postmenopausal women bleeding. He gave another wonderful presentation. Jordan, I just am so proud of you and your presentation as well. The evidence is clear. Golly, I just can't encourage people enough to get their physicians to go on whenever this, and hopefully by the end of the week, I think they said, this will all be up on their website.
I need to talk to Pierre. I need to talk to Pierre and see if you can purchase it and donate it to your physician.
Yeah. Now
that'd be a cool idea. Be like, I'm going to donate money to FLCC in your name for your doctor, and then they get because weird enough, people have donated some money to FLCC in my name, and I get a little letter that says, you know, somebody did that,
It would be the exact opposite of what Dr. Thorpe was talking about. Wouldn't that be great? The exact opposite.
Have the patient,
selling your soul.
Have the patient purchase the conference and send it gratis to their physician.
Hey, doctor, here's what real science.
I made a donation in your name. Yeah,
that's not corrupted. I was just so impressed with the whole thing. They had so many ladies. I didn't see any men that were on the staff that were helping out, but so many ladies there that were just willing to help. It was a first rate scientific and professional all the way around. And what was so enjoyable, and we talked about this, I've been deployed 3 times, and after you're deployed, there are reunions or things like that with people. And it's the first time I've sensed that, in my life. It was just all these, I would guesstimate 400, 500 people there. And everybody had a smile on their face. Friday night, they really did. The Lord guided them in that, because there was no real scientific evidence. It was just Friday night, get together, decompress, love on each other. It was so many high fives and hugs and smiles going around. It was like we've all been in the fight together, not having ever seen each other in person. And then it could have gone. They had to kick us out of the conference room because they had to set up for Saturday morning. I've never had that happen before.
I'll tell you, my Kristen, one of the girls, she was just kind of tried to act like I had to get out of there because of how many people at the end were talking to me. And it was funny. I mean, I even had a pediatric oncologist come up and say, well, you're a hematologist, right? I was like, no, I'm not a hematologist. knowing about hematology recently, because you have to. And she actually started asking me questions. And, you know, it's just interesting. I mean, again, medicine, you're not siloed by what you're boarded in terms of what you can learn and understand. I mean, the information and the data and the patients are there. And I'm not saying that you don't want to come to me for oncology. I'm not a hematology oncology doctor, But if it's a hematological problem related to COVID, I mean, I know it, if that makes sense.
So, and you demonstrated, and people were very, very appreciative of it. By the way, one of the highlights of the weekend, I just have to tell you personally, was meeting your dad. What a great gentleman. What a wonderful man. Oh, man.
Yeah, he had a great time, too. He was he thought the funniest thing was he was going to get CME by listening to his son, which he said. Because I actually was in the hotel. I was like, Dad, do you ever think you'd be at a medical conference with your son? He's like, no, I didn't. But even more, I didn't think I'd ever earn CME for my son. So, which well, CME, by the way, is a continuing medical education. For listening, you go and listen to lectures from the other doctors, and you know, basically fulfill your duty to do ongoing medical education. And so my dad is actually getting one of his hours from me, which is hilarious. So,
yeah. So you got some CME, some COVID medical education, and dispensed it. And that's what the doctors in our country, we plead with those who are not providers, but even the providers, please tell your cohorts about the COVID medical education that went on this past weekend. Jordan, it was neat. You were telling me about the debriefing, as we call in the military. The after action review that you had with the other speakers, and what were they saying about it?
They loved it. I mean, not only that, we thought one of them was suggested we do it in 3 months, and like another one, and I was like, oh, I don't know. Most of them are a little older than me, except for Flavio. I think Flavio's like 32, but of course, all he has is a cat. But which is funny in itself, but. Everyone else has, I think their children are a little older than my children, but at least 6 months. I mean, just because of the information's moved, so thing that we all realize we need a little bit longer. We probably also, a lot of us, not necessarily I was able on this, I spoke on the second day, and because of speaking on the second day, I was able to go back on the night of the first day and just kind of get rid of a bunch of the stuff that I was going to talk about that had already been covered. And so we kind of talked about, hey, we unfortunately in our speaker world, we're in silos, but we need to collaborate a little bit better next time.
Well, I thought the guy that was, I forget his name, he spoke about the hyperbaric oxygen.
Paul Harsh,
yeah, out of Louisiana. Who lost his job. Didn't he say he lost his job because he refused to get the jabs?
Yeah. He said, he lost his hospital privileges, which is, funny.
Yeah. Amazing.
But again, similar to me. I mean, I not lost my privileges. I just told them they can have them back because what they were trying to do, the hospitals here in town were like, well, just get a medical exemption. I said, I know I could get one, but that's not the point.
right.
The point is you can't tell me to take this thing and it's dangerous.
Right. And
I'm a pretty good evaluator of what's not dangerous or not. Like the administrator at the hospital is not as good as me at telling what's best for me. I'm a physician.
Right. And by the way, mentioning that the flu vaccine, as they call it, that has the risk benefit harm ratio is so deplorable that every physician ought to know the newest evidence about those. Last year's it was only 19% effective. But Dr. Harsh, I thought, was brilliant, and obviously he looked to be in his 70s and very experienced in hyperbaric oxygen.
Yeah, just a guy that went to Johns Hopkins for med school and then, was a fellowship director. I mean, these guys are, again, I was probably, as I said at the beginning of my speech, I'm just kind of a physician out here on the front lines. I'm the infantry of this. The guys you heard before are the brilliant ones. But,
all of us are serving our role. Yeah, that's right. All of us are serving our role. And But he had written, he's written, it sounds like, several books. And several years ago, he wrote a book, and the last chapter was the main chapter, he said. And what he told people, and boy, howdy, if it's not played itself out in spades, I don't know what better way to describe it than this. He had told people in the end of the book, that the medical industrial complex, the medical system delivery system of America today, is designed to keep you harmed for its benefit. Unbelievable. Yeah. And I would have thought, what a kook 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, even then, the other thing I was surprised to find, and I think Dr. Nass is from Maine. She's the one that lost her medical license for prescribing ivermectin, even though she's still in legal battles with that. She is, out of all the people, probably the biggest person that's been the martyr in the public eye. But she, interestingly enough, because of her background in bioterrorism, which is what her specialty was. I mean, this lady's brilliant, used by the State Department a lot to go and investigate issues. But she said, as we were talking about these public emergencies and all these laws that were interesting and how they're interpreted and directed at the state level in 2020, she said, oh, Jordan, you know, that was started in preparation by a kind of a legal organization that goes around the country and helps draft legislation in expectation for this to be happening. Which, again, this lady, as a bioterrorism expert, has she's you don't say something without pretty evidence. I don't think they ever got to the Alabama legislature, but a lot of these other legislatures had laws and had things already done, had things already pushed through the court to make sure that when these arguments came against the vaccine, against shutdowns, those kind of things, that the precedent was there, even though to make it easier for the law to say, oh, no, we're going to stick with these draconian measures, which kind of just
blew me away. I don't remember her saying that in public. I'm sure. I'm so glad that you got that.
This was talking to her private. Right. I was just talking to her privately. I'd love that. We need to have her on.
We need to have her on, but we need to have her on in conferences to the legislators who we know, so that they can hear this. And maybe they will bring her before one of their conferences, you know, when they're out of session, and say, this is the reality. And she, in talking to her briefly, very briefly, I got the impression she is not a staunch conservative by any stretch. But
well, here's the beautiful thing about the conference. I could, you know, be wrong, but I outside of Dr. Thorpe, I might have been the most conservative person up there. That's the beautiful thing about freedom of speech and freedom of ideas. Really, don't have a political party,
right?
You're either for them or you're not,
right? And I would be willing to bet that every one of them has changed parties. If they were a Democrat,
well, don't have a home anymore. I'm not sure. Sometimes right, our party has its own ideology too. But
anyway. Well, yeah. I'm not. By the way, that's a great point. I am a conservative. I am not a Republican, because the Republican establishment has not done us the favors that they should have. They've not done our country, Mitch McConnell and that group, the rhinos, as they call. They're unprincipled. It's that simple. They're unprincipled.
Tell us about, we're going to have a two-part interview. Probably the first part is going to be in this next segment. But Stuart, tell us a little bit about who you're going to interview in the next segment.
Yes, man, I had a wonderful hour-long conversation with her on our ride back from Orlando yesterday. What a powerful lady. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Sandy Marichecki. And this lady is... She was the first bomber female test pilot. She's a brilliant lady, went to the University of Illinois ROTC because she wanted to fly. She wanted to be an astronaut. And she ended up going, and her obviously brilliant lady, who after she retired in 07, she went to UC Berkeley and got her PhD in particle physics. And she explained that to me, what that is. Wow. She is a brilliant lady. And after she got that, then she went back, she went to the Air Force Academy and was a physics professor and flat out rejected the mandate to get one of these inoculations, and SARS inoculations. And as a result of that, they fired her illegally. And she was a whistleblower. And the DOD, I'm very concerned, the DOD has lost its bearings, to say the least. To defend the Constitution, foreign and domestic, is every one of their obligations, is fundamental obligation they all have. And they have rejected the Constitution and the freedom that it protect, the freedoms that it protects.
So and we will. Is,
I can't wait to have that interview for this week. I think it's going to end up being a part, two part for next week.
Yeah, it's going to be two parts. So we will be back after this break. Again, this is America Out Loud. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Jordan Vaughn, America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and now we are joined, we're honored to have Sandy Meraki, who is a, I'm sorry, I mispronounced that if I did, but Sandy is a PhD, had her PhD from Berkeley in particle physics, and she was a professor of physics at the in our country's Air Force Academy. And then she was unfortunately this year illegally relieved or fired, despite the law clearly being on the side of those who object to receiving one of these investigational biological agents called vaccines. And we're just honored with to have her with us. She has an illustrious career. She had an illustrious career in the Air Force, and she has stood up for her rights. And it is right that she has done it, and courageous at great cost. But she had to do what she had to do. And with that introduction, I welcome you, Sandy, and thank you for coming on America Out Loud Pulse with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Dr. Peter McCullough sent us your name, and in reading your bio, I was blown away. And I just have to say, I apologize for our country for doing this to you and to our military, in particular, the Air Force. But if you don't mind giving us a rundown of what has transpired telling us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm originally from Chicago. I wanted to be an astronaut pretty much my whole life. Ended up majoring in astrophysics at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. While I was there, I realized that the best way to be an astronaut was to join the Air Force or a military service and become a pilot. And so that's what I did. I was ROTC. I got my commission in 1986, and finished my degree at that point, was commissioned as a lieutenant. I went to pilot training in Lubbock, Texas, and then I went to, then I stayed there actually, and was a T-37 instructor pilot. So it's what we call first assigned IP, instructor pilot. I was there for about 4 years, and then I was 1 year too soon for women in combat, because that was a time when there was a congressional law essentially that forbid women from being in combat. I had always wanted to fly the F-16, but instead I flew the C-141 at McCord Air Force Base in Washington State. And I flew pretty much the around the world missions including the first Gulf War, Somalia, a bit of Kosovo, and things like that. Then I went to the test pilot school at Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert of California, and that was that's kind of the last step, in other words, in order to become an astronaut and put in my application. I finished the school. I was actually, I think, the fifth woman to go through the school as a pilot. And then I stayed as a B-52 instructor, B-52 test pilot, not knowing at the time that I had become the first female aircraft commander in a modern bomber at that time. I'm so glad I didn't know while I was doing it. Then I went to what I call finishing school, Air Command and Staff College in Alabama. And at that point, the Air Force had a manning crisis and pulled a lot of the test pilot people back to the regular Air Force, operational Air Force. And so I ended up going to C-5s. There was a trend in me getting into bigger and bigger aircraft as time went on. But C-5, I couldn't get any bigger than that. That's the biggest aircraft in the U.S. And I flew that out of Travis Air Force Base in Northern California. After that, I was brought into the headquarters at Air Education Training Command in 19th Air Force, specifically at San Antonio, in Randolph Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. And there I was the chief of safety for all of the training bases that had a flight training mission. And we were responsible for ground weapons, explosives, and flight safety. I was there for about 4 years. I was also a T-38 instructor pilot at the schoolhouse, which meant that I was teaching the teachers how to instruct in the T-38. But by this point, I was having a lot of health issues, and I wasn't exactly sure why. I know now, looking back, that I was almost certainly injured by a vaccine, quote-unquote vaccine, in 1992, before I had gone over to the Gulf War. It was actually a year after the ground war, where we were still doing some operations there.
Sure.
And so I realized I wasn't going to make it much further, and so I retired after 20 years. I was at Brooks Air Force Base, which was on the south side of San Antonio, and was able to finish my 20 years there, working in human factors and cockpit design and stuff like that.
Cool.
I realized I needed a non-flying job, and so I went to Berkeley, as you mentioned earlier, University of California, Berkeley, and finished my PhD in particle physics. And I was doing that when a job opened up at the Air Force Academy. My whole goal after I went through the transition assistance program, which is essentially how to, you know, take off in the military to the civilian world and find a job. And I realized that I probably should combine all of my best interests, which was physics, teaching, and the Air Force. And I decided to teach at the Air Force Academy. So when a job opened, I jumped on it and I was hired. And so I was there for 4.5 years at the main academy. And then that job was only a temporary job. And I knew that when I got hired. And then I moved over to the preparatory school at the Air Force Academy. And to explain that real quick, it's if, you know, imagine you've taken about 1,400 students in the main academy. And so what happens to 1401 and 1402 and 1403? Well, they're offered the opportunity to go to the preparatory school, which is a one-year program to kind of beef up their academics, because that's probably why they were 1401 and 1402. And so we give them a free year of kind of the same courses that they would get at the main academy in their freshman year. And we essentially teach them how to learn, which, because our school system doesn't teach them that anymore.
Yes.
And so I spent 2 years. In fact, I was hired a week before, quote unquote, COVID hit. And so I spent my entire time at the prep school at the during COVID. So we'll fast forward to August of 2021, which is really when the fun stuff started. And that's when I sent a notice to my supervisor. And I said, well, here is the federal law that you will be breaking if you mandate a vaccine on anyone. And I explained it very clearly. I, in fact, used the Children's Health Defense handout as one of the pieces of paper that, you know, to document this.
Right.
And so he thanked me, my immediate supervisor, and I also had asked him to send it up the chain so that the rest of the people at the academy would know what they were doing.
Sure. That's the appropriate thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was the beginning of August. And so then the 23rd, I believe, was when the FDA approval, the fake FDA approval, they didn't even follow their own regulations.
Right.
For the Pfizer-BioNTech product called Comirnaty. So that's a specific brand that received the approval. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. You can just read it in English and to know that the approval was essentially just for the application right. and not for the actual medication.
Right.
And on top of that, it said that the Pfizer emergency use authorization shots, which were already going around since December, were legally distinct from the Comirnaty shots.
That's a very important point. You're correct. They are legally distinct from each other. They're not indistinct. They are distinct. They are not the same according to the law.
That's correct. And a federal judge even backed that up. And I believe it was January of 22, if I'm not mistaken, with which court case that was. So the 23rd was the fake FDA approval. And then in there, it had some very confusing language, essentially trying to say that, oh, well, you can take the Pfizer EUA vaccine instead, and it's still the same, quote unquote. Well, they're not.
Right.
Not by law. And so anyone who was mandating the shots was actually breaking the Nuremberg Code and medically experimenting and coercing people into taking these shots.
I would make the point that all of these have broken the Nuremberg Code because there's never been informed consent.
That's correct. Yeah, that's another version. There's 10 major parts to the Nuremberg Code.
Right.
And one of them is fully informed consent, which no one was ever given because it was totally coerced.
That's right. And they still do not give us the informed consent.
Right, even to this day.
Right.
And so I want to point out that even now, Pfizer and BioNTech have never made Comirnaty in the United States. It's never been available to anyone.
It's illegal.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so the Moderna version of their approved, quote unquote, and again, they violated the regulations, the FDA, when they did that, was in January of 2022. And theirs is called Spikevax, which is the most retarded name I've ever heard.
Right, right.
And that's not available, and it has never been available. So every time someone has mandated anyone to take one of these shots, or you're fired, they've essentially violated multiple federal laws and the Nuremberg Code by forcing an experimental medical procedure on someone in order to keep their job.
That's exactly right. And it is amazing that the courts have been so slow in not coming down so harshly on this, because the data, the information, when I was an expert witness in March with the case, it was regarding conscientious objection. You did the right thing. You didn't even go down that path. You just said what y'all are trying to do is illegal. I'm not going down. I'm not seeking to receive the vaccine because I have a conscience against it. No, your actions are illegal and you cannot do this to anyone, right?
That's correct.
Wow.
So I was already fighting for the military. Since I was a federal civilian, I retired in 2007. And so I've been acting in a federal civilian capacity. And I was telling them in August that they can't mandate it against a military person. But they totally twisted it and said, no, we understand you that we can't mandate a civilian. And I'm like, okay, that's not what I said, but you go ahead and say whatever you're going to say. So then the 24th, I believe, was when the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, illegally mandated it on the military. I say that because there's only, of course, every power that our government has to be clearly delineated in our documents, in the law.
That's right.
And so it's not like, well, it doesn't say I can't do it. Well, that's not how it works.
Right.
And so in the law, 10 U.S.C. 1107, there are several stipulations about who can and under what conditions mandate an experimental something, medical procedure, on the military.
Right.
It's only the president. It's only the military, not the civilians, not the contractors. there has to be some sort of theater of conflict where there is a known threat or an expected threat, like anthrax was, let's say, in the first Gulf War, and there's no other possible treatment option available. Right. Well, every single one of those was violated.
That's right.
And so when the SecDef mandated it, he didn't have any authority because only the president can do it. The president had not actually written up anything at that point.
Right. And it was very very confusing to the different branches and to the different commands in each branch because they didn't know what grounds on which they were operating off of. But they went full tilt ahead.
Yep. On purpose, they made it confusing. Just like the FDA did with their fake authorization.
Right.
So they acknowledged that I gave them the correct federal law. They thanked me for pointing it out because they hadn't known about it. And then they went and did it anyway.
Yeah.
So when the students, they were already coming to me before the FDA approval, before the SecDef's order, asking me for help. They says, ma'am, I don't want to take these shots. I have a really bad feeling about it, or I have a religious objection against it. And I'm like, well, just file a religious exemption. And they're like, what? And I went, didn't they tell you? No, they said, get the shots or you're kicked out. Whoa. Okay. That's some serious coercion.
Yeah.
So I knew the regulations for religious exemptions and medical exemptions. Of course, with my vaccine damage, I kind of became an expert with this over time. So I said, well, here's the regulation, how to do it. And I said, well, would you help me? It's like, sure. You started off with a letter and here's the, you know, a draft, an example letter. And then you put your name and you tailor the middle part about what about your religious, you know, beliefs are interfering with your obeying this, you know, illegal order. And so I helped a whole bunch of them. And because the letters all looked similar, because they were using my draft, the prep school started to figure out, the staff, the leadership, that someone was helping the cadets. And I told them, or in this case, we call them cadet candidates at the prep school because they're not full cadets yet. And so I told the students, you never lie. If they ever ask you any questions about this, what's who's helping you, whatever, you tell them straight up. I said, you do not lie ever. And so they said, oh, Dr. Marecki is helping me. Well, so they came and talked to me. My supervisor did. Are you helping the cadets with these religious exemptions? I said, well, of course I am, because I know about the regulations, and they asked me for help. And I said, sure, I'll help you. And they said that I was undermining the chain of command because they're supposed to do it.
Oh, wow. And so with that, just the illegality, the unethical behavior of these commanders is unconscionable. And with that, we're going to take a break and then come back on the other side. We'll continue the story. But this is the way they have operated from the start. And how doctors with any independent views of their own can be complicit and agreeable to this without standing up against it is truly tragic. And unfortunately, that's where we are today. So, Sandy, thank you so much for the story. It's very compelling. It's an indicting story, of course, of those in charge. And thank you for joining us this week on America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley, co-hosting with Dr. Jordan Vaughn of ConcernedDoctors.org.